Welcome to Barn Banter, the podcast by Horse Illustrated. Each month, we bring guests to educate, entertain, or inspire you as you pursue the horsey lifestyle, plus an adoptable horse with a unique story. I'm Susan Friedland, an equestrian author, blogger, and speaker with a soft spot for off-track thoroughbreds. You can find me at my blog, saddleseekshorse.com, or on Facebook or Instagram at Saddle Seeks Horse.
And I'm Holly Kakamis, editor-in-chief of Horse Illustrated and Young Rider magazines. You can find us at horseillustrated.com, youngrider.com, and Horse Illustrated and Young Rider on Instagram and Facebook. Hey, Susan. Well, it's great to be co-hosting again with you. It's always so much fun.
I love chit-chatting with you and talking horse for sure.
I know. We always have so much to talk about. And the first thing I've got to know is how Knight's doing. I know you the vet was out? What was going on there last week?
Oh my gosh. So he came in very lame from the field last week. And it's one of those situations where it's like, okay, I don't think he's dying, but he was just so tentative about his right hind. And it's like, okay, please be an abscess. Please be an abscess. And lo and behold, had the vet out the next day. It's an abscess. So he'll be fine once that passes. But, you know, I've had him almost 10 years, Holly, and this is only the second abscess. So it's got a pretty good track record.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. Yeah, I've been kind of dealing with it. I'm a leaser right now and I just trail ride. But yeah, so there's three horses and I'm leasing one of them. She's the mare and her son, who's like an 8-year-old, really cute. So she's an Arabian. This is like a kind of quarter horse Arabian, her son, and then her sire, who's this gray old man, but gelding now, adorable. So there's three of them, and she's kind of been off and on with a mystery lameness. So it's a real bummer because she's so fun and she's the horse I want to ride. But I've been riding her sire a little bit, and he's just the sweetest little sweetie. And then I usually go out with somebody who rides the other horse. And he's just such a personality. He's like the most beautiful horse I've ever seen, like dappled, sooty buckskin.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful little wedge-shaped head with big eyes and small ears. And then he's just like a real chonk, whereas mine is like the total Arabian build chestnut mare with a lot of chrome. So she's like very ladylike princess. But anyway, like we just laugh so hard because she spooks at mostly plants. Like she doesn't like bark and leaves and like sticks, but everything else is fine.
You're saying she doesn't like trees in general?
No, it's just if a tree looks weird, like if they saw off a branch and it's like obvious that the chainsaw is, she'd switch that. So it's pretty funny. And then like the gelding, he just will not cross mud. And it's like, you know, you've been a trail horse your whole life. I don't understand why you won't cross mud. So we kind of take turns. We do like, well, if she's afraid, he'll go in front if he doesn't want the mud. But anyway. So yeah, I've just been kind of rotating horses a little bit, but I'm so glad to be out trail riding. It's been very rainy in California, very muddy, but we just get out when we can. I'm thrilled to be out there.
Well, and I heard that you are going to ride somewhere else, not California, pretty soon. You're leaving later this week as we record this, right?
I know. And I don't think I've ever, other than like specifically going to write for the magazine about dude ranches and stuff, been on a vacation where I ride ever. So we are going to New Zealand and me and my family. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to look for a ride. I don't know what got into me, but you know, my husband's like, well, I'll be playing golf this day and his parents are coming so they can watch our kid. And I was like, I want to just look for a ride. So I was kind of just Googling and found this Icelandic horse ride in Christchurch, New Zealand. So it looked really fun. They have a more advanced one. You get to gallop on the beach. I've never ridden an Icelandic. I've never tolted. And we've written so many articles about Iceland and Icelandics and how they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And they're so fun and they don't spook and they're just awesome.
They don't spook? Oh my
Also,
gosh.
there's no predators in Iceland, and they have been there for 1,000 years without any new blood introduced. And since they don't, really need to be spooky, it's kind of just gone out of their genetics. And yeah, once one leaves, it can never come back. So, like, they're very pure of a breed for the last 1,000 years. So
That's
it's pretty
fascinating.
cool. So I mean, we'll see if it's true, but yeah, I don't know. But it says like come early so you can tack up your horse and groom and get to meet them, which I thought was really cool. I've
Like
never
camp.
heard of that either.
It's like
So
summer camp for horse
I
girls.
know. So I'm like, what if I'm the
Children.
only person there? It just seemed like a, pretty small operation where she wants to meet everyone and like get to know you. So I'm thrilled. I'm super
Okay,
excited.
please, are you writing an article about this? I hope.
That wasn't like the goal, but I think I
You
have
need
to.
to.
Trusty iPhone, I'll take lots of pictures.
Oh
They
my
come out
gosh.
pretty decent, so yeah,
That's so
I'm
fun.
excited. And then I hear you are also going to be traveling a little bit.
Yes. So I'm going back to my former homeland of Southern California, and I am going to be doing some speaking engagements in the San Diego area. Talking about my book, Marguerite, Misty, and Me. And I was just invited yesterday to go fox hunting with the
Oh.
group that I used to ride with when I lived in Southern California. So I had all these reasons to like talk myself out of it because it's like, oh, I'd have to be up so early. And I don't even know if my fox hunting breeches fit me anymore. And I can't get hurt. I can't get hurt because I've got a really busy March with, events coming up. And then I sort of, paused and thought about the whole carpe diem thing. And so the opportunity is presenting itself. And one of my friends offered me to ride one of her horses. I've never ridden him, but I've seen him and he's super cute. And as she describes him, he's chonky. So the ranch where we're going to ride, they have in the past had some filming for Westerns up there, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful ranch in Mountain Center, California. So I'm really excited to see some of my old hunting buddies and go ride. And hopefully, I won't be too sore because, I am riding still a lot, but not long hours in the saddle like during
Yes. Well,
hunt season.
I'm so proud of you for saying yes. They always say, have your year of yes, say yes to the opportunities. So, and can you believe, I have been riding and eventing for like, I don't know, 30 or more years, and I have never gone fox hunting. To this day, I even spent 2 years while I was in grad school exercising fox hunters as my
What
side
is
job.
it? Okay,
Never.
let's pause for a moment here. If there's a listener out there who fox hunts and you have access to a hireling, Holly would love to come and join you guys. But and didn't you live in Virginia for a while? And you lived in
Yes, well, when I
Kentucky.
lived in Virginia, I was a eventing groom, and that took, 11 hours a day, 6 days a week. And so I was pretty tired and didn't necessarily like have the opportunity. But yeah, when I was grooming fox hunters in Kentucky, they were with I think it was the Woodford Hounds, or no. I don't know. I can't remember now. But anyway, so they invited me one time ever to come on the really sweet, nice horse that I loved. And it was when I had a final exam. And they're like, oh, can't you just reschedule your final exam and tell them you want to take a different time? I'm like, it's not really how finals work. But yeah, they never invited me again. And then the other lady that I
Oh
worked for, she told me I could go anytime on this absolutely nutcase horse that I was told, like, don't even ride him in the pasture, keep him in the arena only, because he'll like just bolt and you'll die. So I was like,
no.
I don't really want to fox hunt on that one. That's available anytime I want. So yeah, it was kind of sad that I never did it, but the Galway, is that where you're going? They have that hunt. I know, over
You're
in
talking about it's like
Temecula, is it?
yeah,
Or
it's
no,
called
I don't know
Santa
what
Fe
it's called, but
Hounds.
it's over in
Santa Fe
Temecula.
Hounds.
And okay, so I always wanted to like that's probably the closest one to me. So I do want to. It is a bucket list, but again, I'm at an age where I don't want to die. And so, I mean,
Well,
I would go
that's
to
how they have.
Ireland and do it, but I feel like they jump
No,
crazy.
that's where you'll die.
Yeah, they jump like wire fences in Ireland. I don't want to die. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So, but you've got an air vest, right? Air vest, hard
Somewhere
vest,
in my closet under who
helmet,
knows
just,
what. Yeah.
gear up. But no, you'll be fine because you're a way more gutsy rider than I am. And if I hunted in Southern California, I know you can for sure.
I mean, I know you can always go in the like third field that doesn't jump at all, but like I definitely want to jump. I don't mind a 2'6" coop at this stage, but like if they're 4 feet on like a board fence, I'm not doing it at this point. But yeah, I would love to.
Self-preservation.
Yes.
You got a magazine to get out, actually, two magazines to get out and a son to raise. So, yeah.
Magazines. Yes, I'm finishing already the May June issue of Young Rider, and it is the beginning of March. So yeah, if that tells you anything, we're and I finished the May issue of Horse Illustrated already. So that's gonna be mailing out soon. So get ready
Very
for that
excited.
one. But yeah, that's
Well,
that's
speaking
all
of
of it
Horse
in a nutshell.
Illustrated,
It's a
we
lot
should
to it.
probably get on with our Barn Banter by Horse Illustrated guest.
All right, sounds good. With unrivaled performance and breakthrough equine technology, Exhibitor's color-enhancing system is pH balanced, contains no harsh chemicals, bleaches, or dyes, and intensifies your horse's natural coat color, contrast, and shine. Champion dressage trainer and international Grand Prix rider Kim Gentry says, "The quick shampoo and quick conditioner are really amazing. The formula is very low sudsing, and with very little effort, it pulled the dirt and grime off the horse's coats without having to do a lot of scrubbing. The thing I'm really impressed with is how soft it leaves the horse's mane and tail. For professional show ring results, Exhibitor's formulas clean and maintain the magnificence of your show horse. For more, visit exhibitorsequine.com."
On today's show, we speak to Dr. Rachel Motet, an independent equine nutrition consultant and educator from Central Florida who created her business, Legacy Equine Nutrition, to advise owners of how to best feed their horses.
Rachel, can you tell us how you landed on your career in equine nutrition and what does an average day in the life, if such a thing exists, look like for an equine nutritionist?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent quite a bit of time in school and I found myself really enjoying my nutrition courses, my digestive physiology courses. And when I finished my master's, I actually went into teaching full time for a few years and ended up working for a feed company after that. And I loved it. I had the coolest job in the world for a horse person. I would visit horse farms kind of all day, every day, go to different horse shows and events, put on seminars, and I just really fell in love with the industry. So I did decide to pursue a PhD in the area of nutrition with an emphasis on equine, of course. And I did that while working full time, and I had hoped to take on a nutritionist position with the company I was with. Unfortunately, within the year after I finished my PhD, I'd say they were doing more eliminating than adding those positions. So I decided to go independent. And I've been independent for about 4 years now. And my business, and there's not definitely a typical day, but my business, I do three main things in it. And one of those things would be consulting for different nutrition or supplement companies. So right now I've got a project I'm doing with a company that has a few gut supplements. Another thing I do a lot of, I consult one-on-one with horse owners or farm owners. So I help them come up with the best plan for the health and life stage needs for their horse. I help them weed through supplements that might not be beneficial for their horse. And if someone has a horse with health issues that require dietary intervention, I'm there to set up a plan for them. And then the last thing I do in my business is a lot of education. That's probably the bulk of what I do is teach people to make recommendations for others and teach them how to feed horses properly. So in a nutshell, as an entrepreneur, I get to plan my day. I get to choose how much time I spend doing each of those things. But so no day looks the same, but I mix those three main things into the day.
Makes sense. And I think those all are great topics that we're going to touch on in a little bit here. So many questions for you. But first, I also want our readers to know about, or our listeners to know about your personal horses. Can you tell us about them and what you do with them?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I have a coming 3-year-old KWPN. His name is Voodoo, and I have high hopes for him to be a jumper. So I'm hoping that he wants to do that in a few years' time. Right now, we're just at a stage where I'm looking at options to get him to start going under saddle. And then I have a 5-year-old paint horse. His name is Caliente. And I show in the hunter ring with him. He's really slow and steady. And I have a background in eventing. So it's definitely been a change of pace. But him and I compete locally and at the World Equestrian Center in the hunter ring.
Well, that sounds like fun. I've always wanted to go to the World Equestrian Center, so that sounds like a really cool place to compete your horse.
It's a great place to visit, too. Pretty
Yeah.
much. Anyone, even non-horse people, should take a visit because it's incredible. There's tons of arenas, tons of shopping, activity. It's just a very cool place to go. So I highly recommend it.
And then circling back to our topic at hand, can you tell us a common feeding mistake or a myth that you see all the time, when you're consulting at farms?
Oh, wow. So there are so many myths. I don't even know if I can scratch the surface on that because there's a ton of them. You know, everything from iron is going to harm your horse to, you know, there's myths, a lot of myths about alfalfa. There's just many, many out there. But what I will say is there is a common feeding mistake that I see, and that would be many owners feed the product their horse is getting incorrectly. And what I mean by that is not only do people sometimes select the wrong product, which makes total sense because there are hundreds of different feeds and supplements you can purchase. So there is a lot of different things out there to weed through. So number one, it's choosing the wrong product. Number two, it's not feeding, you know, even the right product appropriately. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's good for every horse owner to grab a scale, whether it's, you know, a hand scale, a fish scale, luggage scale, something that you can go to the barn, see how much of the feed your horse is getting, and actually weigh it. And what you want to make sure is that that feed is being fed, you know, close to that recommendation, if not at it, that's on the back of the feed bag or on the tag. So what happens a lot is people have a feed that they like, and let's say, for instance, they're feeding a product that is designed to be fed at 4 to 6 pounds a day, and maybe they're feeding their horse a handful or like a pound. What happens, and each feed is going to be designed, you know, to be fed at that certain feeding rate based on different information about your horse, like their life stage, workload, and weight. And when you go below that, you're shortchanging your horse of some of their key vitamins and minerals. So, for instance, you know, if I'm feeding that feed that based on my horse's information, it's recommending 5 pounds a day and I'm feeding 1 pound, you can almost liken that to taking your daily vitamin and mineral and like slicing off a little edge of it, right? You're not getting the full plane of nutrition that you're after. So it becomes really important to take a look at, all right, what am I feeding my horse? Are they getting the right amount based on what this product is recommending? And if not, start thinking about, should I be looking at something different that's going to offer full nutrition and, you know, meet their needs? And it also becomes important in that conversation to understand how to body condition score the horse. Because sometimes in that same scenario, if I'm like, well, I love this feed. I only need a pound. The bag says feed 5 pounds. I'm just going to jump up to 5 pounds per day. That could be problematic because that could cause weight gain. So that I would say, however, though, is a major theme is that many horse owners aren't feeding the right product or the proper amount.
Right. I'm so glad that you said that because with my own background in equine nutrition, that is just, I will beat that drum all day long and people just don't know about it. In my last barn, I was the only person with a scale that was weighing feed and I probably looked crazy and they're like, what's this woman doing? But yes, it's not that hard. I think I had like a $1 scale. You just put your little feed scoop on top, you weigh it before the feed's in there and after, and if you want 5 pounds, then feed 5 pounds. So it's just not what you think it's going to be. It's usually quite different than the scoop that you're giving. So I completely agree with the getting the right amount, because that's what the feed is designed for. So thank you for that. Another question would be, is there something that you just, besides that, would want horse owners to understand that will enhance their overall health and performance?
You know, the key to good nutrition in the horse, it's often a lot more simple than we make it. You can really get a lot accomplished with a good quality forage program in place, and then either ration balancer, or if your horse needs more energy or calories to maintain good body condition with a good feed. But a lot of times we like to overcomplicate it. And I will say that there's really good, very eye-catching marketing out there that would make us believe if I don't feed all these supplements, you know, my horse is going to die a slow, painful death, right? Like we are very, you know, compelled by the marketing we see to go out and purchase a lot of supplements that, you know, most aren't harmful, but many are unnecessary. So what I would say is keep in the back of your mind, for it to be a good program, it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, good quality forage at an appropriate feeding rate. What that means is at minimum 1.5% of your horse's body weight in forage per day, free choice salt, and then either a ration balancer or a feed, you know, a quality product that can get you pretty far. It can, you know, check most boxes nutritionally. And there are things worth trying, you know, that might help with coat quality, or if your horse has a deficiency, let's say in vitamin E, and supplementation is necessary. But I think keeping it simple is often really the best for the health of our horse, and you can have a high performer on a very simple diet.
Right. I am 100% with you on that, as a keep it simple person myself. And can you just tell us why forage is so important? I know, most people probably know this already, but haven't maybe thought about it. So just kind of give us a little explainer.
Yeah, so forage is the most important, you know, pillar of the equine diet. And horses have been evolving for millions of years as grazers. And because of that, their digestive anatomy really lends itself towards, you know, browsing, grazing all throughout the day, and pretty continuous fiber flowing through the digestive tract. So their hindgut, for example, is highly sophisticated in its ability to, you know, house a microbiome that is really good at fermenting fiber and making that into utilizable energy for the horse. And the stomach of the horse, it's fairly small. It's really not designed to do much in terms of digesting, but it is something, you know, of course, very critical in the tract, but all of the anatomy together is really intended to move things through, have, you know, a fair amount of digestion in the foregut, and then all the fermentation or the bulk of that is going to go on in the hindgut of the horse. So that would include your cecum and your colon. But forage, you know, for so many reasons, it's important, and to maximize it without causing obesity. So it's kind of finding that sweet spot. How do I keep my horse eating forage as much as possible without making them obese? Because obesity is also a health issue. And that's why slow feeders have become really popular and a great way to keep our horses, you know, chewing, salivating, buffering, and then fermenting. Those are four words that I like to use a lot when talking about forage. So the horse chewing is going to stimulate, and something in the mouth is going to stimulate saliva release or saliva production, which is going to send, you know, that forage into the stomach, which is going to help buffer the stomach environment along with the saliva, and eventually make its way to the hindgut to be fermented. So there is, you know, a lot in this process of consuming forage that is just going to support overall good health of the horse.
Definitely. And then I know one sort of nutrition related thing that is, people have a lot of concerns about is ulcers. They tell us, 80, 90% of, riding horses have ulcers, and basically we need to be panicking about it a lot. And then Susan's horse has definitely been scoped to find ulcers, and she's been told to feed pre-ride alfalfa. Is that something you recommend? Is a lot of alfalfa with ulcer-prone horses? I know, like when I lived in Kentucky, they didn't feed any alfalfa ever unless you had a broodmare. And then out in California, pretty much everyone is feeding alfalfa because it's more available. It's easier to grow out here. So, what's your feelings about alfalfa and ulcers?
So, yes, the ulcer conversation has become really prevalent with nutritionists and amongst horse owners because we do know that over 60% of the performance horse population is affected by gastric ulcer syndrome. And the more we learn about it, we're actually now discovering that there are two very distinct areas of the stomach that are prone to ulceration, which is, most common in the squamous or non-glandular region, or we are also now seeing glandular lesions versus glandular ulcers, more appropriately called lesions. And these are two very distinct conditions. While they both affect the stomach, and squamous ulcers are most impacted by diet and management, whereas glandular lesions are most prevalent in our warm blood population. And those are less helped and prevented through dietary measures. But when we're talking about the squamous ulcers, which are the most common, feeding like a pre-ride small meal of alfalfa can be really helpful. And the reasons why you've got elevated calcium content in alfalfa, which can almost act as something similar to a Tums. So it's going to help buffer the stomach environment, and it also is going to form what's called a fiber mat. And what that mat can do, kind of like it sounds, it is this actual physical layer that can help soak up some of that acid, keep it from splashing on the upper squamous portion of the stomach that is quite vulnerable to ulceration. And then in the other region of the stomach, that glandular region, alfalfa isn't something that at this point in time we've really seen to necessarily benefit. There's still a lot that's not understood about the cause, risk factors associated with glandular lesions, other than it's quite prevalent in the warm blood population. So I would say if your horse is diagnosed, and any horse really can benefit from that pre-ride fiber snack, whether it's a couple pounds of forage, whether you're giving them a gastric buffer. There's some good ones on the market that you can feed like a snack, really for the health and well-being of any horse that can benefit. But when we're trying to think about, keeping ulcers at bay or glandular lesions at bay, the alfalfa is really best suited to a horse that, is diagnosed with squamous ulcers or has that in their history. But again, that can benefit really any horse before they're going into exercise with keeping the environment buffered, forming a fiber mat, keeping acid from splashing the vulnerable portion of the stomach.
That makes sense. I think that's really good advice. And, a lot of people aren't thinking just in terms of every horse can benefit from it. So I think that will be very helpful for people. Another thing I kind of see people get a little panicky about is vitamin and mineral deficiency. Oh, should I feed this scoop of this and that? How likely are these deficiencies? Do people need to be worrying about that? I know I'm a big fan of ration balancer personally, but what do you recommend and tell people to kind of put their minds at ease about, oh, is my horse suffering from this deficiency or that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And the time where you might see deficiencies or imbalances, I would say, you're more likely to see that if you're relying only on hay or only pasture. And even though good quality pasture is going to check most of your nutrient boxes, there can be some holes in trace mineral. Sometimes you can find lack of certain vitamins. Usually the pasture is pretty abundant in beta carotene, which will be converted to vitamin A or, vitamin E. It's our best source of that. So usually, good quality pasture is going to be fairly robust in its nutrient profile. However, there can be some gaps. We see more nutritional gaps with hay that's been dried and baled. You can see pretty rapid depletion of some of the vitamins I just mentioned. minerals would be fairly stable, but there really is a need, no matter what type of forage program the horse is on, to at the very least have in a trace vitamin mineral or a ration balancer. When you have that and you're purchasing, you know, a good quality, well-balanced one, which I realize there are a ton out there and it's hard to know which one of those are well-balanced. I would say, you know, most of your major feed companies in the US have a good quality ration balancer that you can choose. And then there are some smaller companies that make your trace vitamin minerals that also do a great job. If you have questions, you know, is it a good one? You can connect with people like myself, nutritionists or nutrition advisors, or even contact the company directly, see if they've got a PhD or someone who's a nutritionist on staff that can help answer questions about which is the right fit for your horse. But I would say, as long as you've got, you know, a balancer at minimum, if you are feeding a feed and feeding it at the appropriate amount of a good quality feed, your vitamin mineral bases should be covered. The big one, though, that I can see, you know, being problematic for a number of people, and the thing I run into more often than the others, would be vitamin E deficiency. And the best thing that you can do, it's one of the few things that we can actually pull blood, have a serum analysis run for vitamin E status, and get, you know, a pretty good depiction of what's in the body. So this is something I recommend for people, particularly horses that don't have much access to pasture. So have your vet pull vitamin or pull blood for vitamin E, send that in just to make sure that you are not deficient in that area. It's very easy to test and be certain on, you know, what the status in your horse is. I don't see, you know, tons of issues with deficiency. Again, as long as people are doing at least a balancer or feeding the feed as recommended. But, you know, there are very few tests. There's a number of companies out there that say, well, you know, we can look at your horse's blood or manure and see full nutrient status, or rather hair even, you know, mane hair. There really is not a reliable method to do that at this point in time and see full body nutrient status, other than, you know, analyzing the diet of everything going in. And then, like I said, vitamin E, selenium is another one that we can grab from blood pretty easily. But other than that, having a nutritionist evaluate the diet is the best way to know if you're deficient or not.
Absolutely. And little plug for ration balancer, if people aren't familiar, it's great for easy keepers because you only need to feed a very small amount. So you're not giving him 5 pounds of grain to get his vitamins and minerals. And I think people are just kind of really used to that big 50-pound bag of feed and scoops of it every day. But, you know, if they're not familiar, that's basically what ration balancer has, the good stuff without as many calories. So,
the funny thing about that, too, like I mentioned earlier in this chat, you know, sometimes we don't always feed correctly. So people find that they like a ration balancer, but maybe their horse needs more, you know, to maintain good body condition. So then you run into the opposite problem where you can cause toxicity. So again, read the tag, because I've run into people before feeding 4+ pounds of ration balancer, you know, that designed to be fed at, you know, usually about 1 to 2 pounds per day. So, you know, oftentimes that's on accident, but you can run into a situation, you know, more of a good thing is not better in those cases. It's just more and sometimes toxic. So be cautious about that if you like ration balancers. But like you said, they're amazing for your easy keepers. They're great.
Yeah, I had my first hard keeper and I was like, this is so weird to go to the store and pick out, you know, something that's high fat and has, you know, I have to feed all of this feed every day. But, you know, every horse is different. So that is good to keep in mind. And then a quick thing on supplements. I know this is like all very controversial, but you know, there are some that have the colic reimbursement coverage. A lot of them, do you feel like, are more, you know, just marketing and people want to buy them to feel good? Is there a lot of situations where, I mean, there's so many different types of supplements. There's hoof and fat and, you know, the colic ones. And so do you feel like it's okay generally to feed them, or do you think under the advice of a nutrition expert is better? What's your feeling on supplements?
Oh boy, this opens a whole can of worms. And I actually, I teach courses about this. Last year, I launched something called the Supplement Academy, where people literally sent me their list of supplements and I reviewed all of them. What I will say, I mean, there are like thousands to choose from. What I will say, there are a lot of bad ones. I would say probably, 80% in my eyes really do not have a good, solid, scientific backed use. However, I would say by and large, most supplements are not harmful. So you run into, a lot of supplements that on paper, it's like, well, this looks amazing. This looks really good. When I do a little further investigating, I'm like, actually, the science would tell us the exact opposite. And I can accept that the science doesn't always paint the full picture, tell the full story, but there's also things that, the compound itself is really not viable or really isn't going to be able to perform the action that the marketing is telling you. Or there are just too many unknowns or other variables involved. So you have a lot of things that just, I would say, provide no value at all. You have a big group of supplements that, not harmful, not maybe not helpful, but unknown. And that, I hate that murky area because you'd rather definitively say yes or no, especially in my position. But, you've got a number of gut supplements that you can have a good quality product and one horse responds to it and the horse next to it doesn't. And that would have more to do with the individual makeup of what's in the gut, that microbial population or those populations that are dominant, and it can have to do with quality of the product. There's just so many variables. So it's hard to say, all are good, all are bad. What I will say is there's a number of people who do buy gut supplements for the colic coverage. And, those supplements that you're referring to, the companies that have those out there, the ones that I'm aware of are reputable companies. So it's a safe product. I would say the extent at which it actually provides benefit is pretty questionable. However, that colic coverage is, a big thing to a lot of people. What I will say, read the fine print. Read every little word of that fine print because there are a number of people that will go for that reimbursement and they actually did not follow the protocol to be able to get that. And so they don't qualify. And that's a bad thing to find out after you've went ahead and given the green light for the surgery. So make sure you read the fine print. And again, those ones and those companies, they're good, reputable companies. How much is the product going to help your horse? Hard to say, but not harmful. And there are a few supplements out there, though, that I've had to, put a halt to. A few weeks ago, I found there was a website that was recommending that people go down the cleaning aisle and buy a certain cleaning agent to feed to their horse to, potentially prevent laminitis. And
Oh no.
yeah, we have to be really, really cautious, especially, whether you want to believe it works or not. From a safety standpoint, the protocol of, checks and balances with something that's intended to clean the toilet or your genes versus something you're supposed to ingest is going to look very different. So I would say be a little cautious if you're doing some of your own supplementing and like, well, this, I know some things are multi-purpose and dual use, but just be careful. There's a lot of bad information on the internet. There's a lot of good info too, but if you don't know how to weed through and find what your good sources are, you can get into trouble. And,
Your common sense.
yeah, I know I'm trying to not continue rambling on about supplements, but what I would say is kind of getting back to what I said in the beginning, you can accomplish a lot without supplements and still do an incredible job on your horse's program. So, if you've got questions about what's needed or not, look up someone like me who's independent who can help you weed through that.
Agreed. And then on the topic of keeping things simple, I always like to say, forage, water, a salt block, and then on the on just to, you know, that's a good baseline for anybody. On the topic of salt, is there any particular advice you'd give? And I know that kind of relates a little bit to electrolytes. I know so many people feed electrolytes, and I've never been a big one of them, but you know, are these topics related? Salt, electrolytes? Do you recommend electrolytes for certain situations?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing to know, every single horse does need access to free choice salt. Now, the thing is, and what you're after in that is the sodium. And table salt is sodium chloride. Generally, I would say your chloride base is going to be met from what's in the diet, but we're often trying to make sure that we are able to supply the sodium from salt. And you know, some horses are really good about consuming salt. Like you've got a white salt lick in their stall, they'll consume it because they will have a physiological drive to consume that sodium. However, that can sometimes be overridden. Potentially, it's a texture thing. Some horses just don't tend to like the white salt licks. And in those cases, if your horse is not using that white salt lick, you can try like a Himalayan salt lick. Some of them seem, for whatever reason, whether it's a taste or texture thing, I think difficult to know, but they do seem to like those better. Or maybe it's the Redmond Rock, whatever it may be, try a different form. If your horse does not seem to like anything you've tried for it, and making sure that it's, you know, predominantly at least 90% salt, if we're talking about, you know, your source of sodium. What you can do is you can add 2 tablespoons of salt on top of the ration per day. And that's going to get your maintenance amount covered. So, salt, you know, your sodium chloride are going to be a big part of the electrolytes that one might be after if they're thinking about giving an electrolyte. So, the time when you would want to think about going from salt to an electrolyte, I would say if you live in a hot climate, your horse is sweating a lot during the summer months and losing a fair amount of sweat that's actually visible. I mean, that's a very subjective measure, but I would say if you've got a horse that's sweating repeatedly, you know, on a weekly basis, an electrolyte that is, you know, the first ingredient is listed as salt or sodium, that would be ideal to administer. Oftentimes, I would say for most horses, the diet is going to be fairly abundant in a number of the electrolytes that we're after in these electrolyte products for horses. So, unless you're in that real hot, humid climate and/or your horse is sweating fairly regularly, salt may be just fine. Performance athletes, I do like doing electrolytes, you know, when they're working hard, sweating regularly, and we're really truly trying to replenish what's lost in the sweat and trying to encourage water consumption. And again, your good electrolytes, your high quality ones are going to have salt or sodium listed as, you know, the first ingredient. Typically, it'll be salt because sodium would be second in prevalence to chloride and table salt, but that's what you want to see at the top of that list.
Absolutely. And then just wrapping up, if somebody, you know, is interested in consulting with an equine nutritionist, what do you recommend and how does that process look? You know, finding someone independent like you, and then what kind of a process do they go through?
Yeah, so there are probably about a handful of us in the United States that do this independently. There are a number of companies that will have, you know, PhDs on staff, like the big companies typically, that if you are, you know, buying brand X, you can contact the company, see if you can chat with their nutritionist. You can be a bit limited, and they're probably not going to consult on your full lineup of products, you know, and give you that unbiased feedback that an independent nutritionist would be giving you. So you could start with a feed company. Otherwise, you can look for someone like me. Most people, I would say, who want a consult don't necessarily need to work with a PhD. I've trained a group of advisors that, you know, they give advice as well. If you have a complex situation where you need a PhD, myself, you know, Dr. Claire Tunis, who's a friend of mine, she does a lot of independent consulting. There's a few others too, but you can reach out to one of us. If we don't have time, we can certainly connect you with another PhD who might be able to take on the case. But The process itself, typically you're going to go through an intake process where you're going to submit information about your horse's health, your horse's current diet, including amounts and products that you're feeding. You might submit pictures of your horse. I always recommend that, or I always ask for that, and pictures of your horse in their environment so I can get some ideas about, where they live, how they live, because all of those pieces factor into the nutrition recommendation. So every one of us does it a bit differently, but it is a process that, you want to work with someone who aligns with your needs and is asking a lot about what is your goal in working with a nutritionist and making sure that that is met through the consult process.
Absolutely, that makes sense. And then just to, for the last question here, where can people find you online, and can you tell us just what tools are on your website? It was very interesting to me, your website, so I just thought you could tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, people can find, there's a couple places you can find me. You can find me at legacyequine.com. That's my website. That's how you can get in touch with me and find out a little bit more about the courses I teach. Another spot you can find out more about me and hear some of my ramblings would be Equine Nutrition Education, which is a Facebook group that I founded. We've got over 16,500 members in there. Myself and a couple others are the only one who post. So the posts that go in there come from PhDs and DVMs. I post different educational opportunities. I post, my feedback on different things floating around social media that have to do with nutrition. So you can hear and see some of that there. And even just search my name. A lot of people find me on Facebook. If they can't figure out where to find my website, connect with me there. But again, my business name is Legacy Equine Nutrition, and you can go to legacyequine.com to get connected with me.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Rachel.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's not easy being a cowgirl, but a little magic helps. No matter if she's a horse trainer, photographer, mother, executive, or athlete, Cowgirl Magic Hand Cream is here to add a hint of the luxurious life to any active, hardworking lifestyle. The new Cowgirl Magic Ultra Hydrating Cream is rejuvenating and clean, complemented by a light, soothing fragrance. Formulated with a blend of coconut, apricot, avocado, sesame, and olive oil, this age-defying formula works hard to deeply hydrate, restore, and fight the appearance of wrinkles as it absorbs quickly, with no residue or greasy feel. Learn more at cowboymagic.com.
The ASPCA Right Horse Program brings us this month's adoptable horse, Trooper, a 21-year-old Tennessee Walking Horse gelding. We'll be chatting with Christine Devanche, Executive Director of Horses Haven in Howell, Michigan, to learn more about Trooper. To see Trooper's profile, go to myrighthorse.org. Hi, Christine. We are so happy to have you on our show today and get to learn a little bit more about Trooper, your horse that it sounds like could be a dream for a trail rider. But before we get into the details on Trooper, just orient us to where you are exactly in Michigan.
Horses Haven is located in southeastern Michigan, right between Ann Arbor and Lansing. And thank you, Susan, for having me today to talk about Trooper.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Trooper's personality and maybe how long you've known him.
Yep, Trooper is a great guy. We have had him here for about 4 months, have had the opportunity to get to know him both on the ground and in the saddle and in the pasture. He's a good friend, he's an easy pasture mate. He came to us with 4 shoes on. We don't typically keep back shoes on unless it's medically necessary. He had been used as a trail horse. So that's been his job for the last 3 years. He currently wears front shoes. He's very comfortable in them. It's pretty rocky terrain out here sometimes, so we have maintained those front shoes in the pasture. Quiet, middle of the rank, causes no issues. In the barn, Trooper could be handled by a kid. He is a perfect gentleman. He'll stand in the cross ties all day long. He loves attention, loves to be groomed, loves to be pet, comes right up and interacts with anyone. But under saddle, he tends to be very forward, like a lot of gated horses are. As soon as you hit the saddle, he wants to move out. So he's ground covering and forward, which, for a lot of people equals a lot of fun on the trail, but then makes him not as kid safe, you know, for a small child or an early beginner rider.
And do you know anything about his demeanor on trail? Is he kind of a steady Eddie, or is he, you know, someone that maybe will kind of pause to look at new things?
He is a looky-loo, but he keeps going. He hasn't offered us a spook at all. Never like to say they are spook-free, but he's pretty relaxed and looks around, takes in his environment, and just keeps moving forward. We have been working on his brakes. I think he has, in his previous life, just hit the trail and kept on going.
Oh my gosh. And what type of rider or person do you think would be a good fit for a Trooper?
We think that a confident advanced beginner or intermediate rider would be great for a Trooper. Again, on the ground, he's very quiet, very laid back. But when you get in the saddle on a gated horse that likes to move forward, sometimes it can be disconcerting if you haven't had enough experience under the belt to move along at a nice gated clip.
And do you have any fun stories about his personality or just little anecdotes of, you know, grooming him, things like that?
Sure. You know, we had a little bit more information about Trooper because he was an owner surrender that the person really loved him. And she delivered him to us and gave us some history. So we put him in some cross ties to chat with her. And yeah, it was probably 5 or 6 minutes. And we turned around and he was completely asleep and snoring in the cross ties. Other than that, we do have, we call her our guinea pig rider. One of our volunteers' children is 10 years old. And when we feel like a horse has potential to be kid safe, we bring them in. And she loves taking him for walks. We have a miles challenge here at the farm. So the grooms, whoever walks the most miles with their horse gets a prize at the end of the month. And she loves taking Trooper off because she has the energy to keep up with his rapid gait. But he stops and checks with her, makes sure he's not dragging her around, and always is looking for a cookie from her.
Oh, of course, the cookies. And I was looking at his picture and I couldn't quite tell because it looked like he has his winter coat. Is he black or is he like a really dark bay? He's very cute.
He is very cute. I believe he is a black horse. Occasionally they shed out and prove me wrong, but right now I haven't seen any of the brown around his muzzle or points or anything like that.
Okay, cool. And then where can people learn more about Trooper and apply to adopt?
They can go right from the myrighthorse.org site, search Trooper, and there's an application there, or they can go to horseshaven.org and fill out our adoption interest survey and read about Trooper at horseshaven.org, and under rideable horses is where he would be listed.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to pull for Trooper to find his perfect human because he sounds like a good guy and I know someone will really enjoy having him in their life.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
For special rates on Horse Illustrated and Young Rider magazine subscriptions just for our podcast listeners, visit horseillustrated.com/barnbanter.
Don't be shy. Show us some barn banter love by leaving a review, and you can tell all your friends too.